Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I am so excited to be here for our seventh season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show, Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO, as we call it. And it was one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. In 2018, our beloved improv show became the podcast it is today, hosted and produced by Gay City News. It is an honor to hold space for the coming out, coming into self stories our guests share. And I am so excited, honored, and thrilled about my guest here with me today, Bernie Wagenblast. She/her is a transportation journalist and voice actor, perhaps best known as one of the voices of the NYC subway. She previously was a New York traffic reporter, heard on stations such as WABC and 1010 WINS. More recently, she provided the voice of the train conductor on the Warriors album by Lin-Manuel Miranda and Issa Davis. She transitioned in 2023. Bernie, welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Dubs. Great to be here with you.
So great to be here with you. And I must admit, I'm just like slightly intimidated because you are, first of all, a celebrity and a star. And secondly, you've been doing like radio and voice for, you know, decades. And I'm here just like barely been doing it for years. And so I'm just like sitting here in awe of you. So just it's really exciting to be in the same Zoom room as you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's great to be here with you as well.
How's your day going? How's your week going? We're recording on a Thursday, so we're almost to the weekend. How's your week going?
It is going well. I am having a very good week. I found out yesterday that a film that features me won 3 Clio Awards, which was really cool. Those are advertising awards. And on the same day, I also found out it had won a Best Documentary Award at a film festival. So, hey, you can't ask for a much better week than that, can you?
No, that's great. I definitely want to talk about that film in a little bit, but that's really exciting. Congratulations on all of those awards.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so we all have multiple coming out stories and multiple coming into self stories, and I would love to hear one of those stories that you'd like to share with us.
Sure. I say 2 key parts. First of all, I've always known that I was trans. Obviously, I did not know that word. I grew up in the 1960s and the 1970s, and transgender was not a word that was commonly used back then. I understand it was probably created around 1965, so I'm actually older than the word transgender. But I've always known. I remember when I was just a real little kid wishing that I was a girl, and that has never left me. But the problem was, growing up in the 1960s and the 1970s, the first part was I thought I was the only person in the world that felt like this. I had no idea that anyone else felt that they weren't comfortable with the gender that they had to present. And it wasn't until probably around 10 years old or so, I happened to run across a paperback book, which was the autobiography of Christine Jorgensen. And for those who don't know, she is probably the first American who was well known who had transitioned. She had transitioned in the early 1950s. So that was like, oh my gosh, there are other people like this who are out there. So that was very key to me. But again, it was something that for the most part, I suppressed in terms of sharing with anyone because I just could not see any viable way I could go through life presenting as a woman. So I would do my best in the role that I was kind of forced into of being a boy and then a man. So I did that. The second part, we have to jump all the way ahead to 2017. And I think one of the things that had always held me back from transitioning was not just the fear of how people would react, but I had this deep-seated fear that if I transitioned, I would be hideous. I would be a laughingstock that people would point and laugh at me, and I just did not want to have that kind of a life. But I had heard about this new app that had come out then called FaceApp, and the way I had discovered it was from either YouTube clips or late-night comedy shows where they were uploading photos of people like NFL quarterbacks and showing them as women. And these photos were pretty amazing, but I figured, oh, TV stations, they were doing some photoshopping or something to really make these look good. But I figured, well, it's free, it doesn't cost anything. Let me give it a shot and see what happens. So I uploaded a photo of myself, and the photo that it returned kind of blew me away. It was the first, what I felt, realistic representation of how I might look if I were to present to the world as a woman. I saw a resemblance to my mom that I had heard of in the past, but had never recognized. And that began the transition journey for me. It was at that point that I said, I have to give this a shot, or at least take steps short of socially transitioning to see if that would be enough for me. So that was pretty much the story. And then the final big piece was January 1st of 2023. I can be a little OCD at times, and I wanted to have a very specific point. So I decided that that was going to be my New Year's resolution for 2023, was that I was going to transition. And I sent, you know, I told a number of close people in person and with individual conversations before that, but a few days before that date, I had posted to the world that I was going to be socially transitioning. So that was the final big moment for me.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing. This is all so resonant. And it's just, you know, I talk about this on a lot of different episodes because, you know, I've interviewed folks of all different identities, all different ages, and our journeys are so similar. Mm-hmm. Like thinking that we're alone and that we're the only one who's feeling this way. And there's something really comforting about knowing that we kind of all went through this together, even though we weren't together. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. We share that in common.
Yeah. So were there moments when you were, you know, in the 60s and 70s when you, you know, you said you always knew you wishing you were a girl. Were there any opportunities for you to kind of explore or express that side of you, either like with friends or alone? Like I'm thinking, like I would, when I played Barbies, I always played with the Ken. And I always would, like, you know, express myself through the clothes that I wore, like in t-shirts. And so I'm curious if you ever had those opportunities.
Yeah, I had a few scattered opportunities. I remember at about 4 years old being at my grandmother's house, and she probably thought it was just innocent little kid play, but I would be sitting in front of her vanity. I would put on some of her necklaces, and she had this powder puff that I would powder my face with this powder puff. So that was one thing that came to mind. Another mm-hmm. one was maybe a couple of years later. I was about 6 years old, and my best friend lived across the street from me, and she was a girl, and she had a fort that her dad had built in their backyard. And I don't remember the specifics of how it all came about, but I convinced her that we should switch clothes. I don't even remember what she was wearing, but we traded clothes. And her older brother, who's probably about 10 years old at the time, discovered us, told his mom and dad, who in turn told my mom and dad. And my mom and dad confronted me, but not in a way of like, oh, what's wrong with you? You know, this is sick. None of that. It was just, you can't do that. You can't be doing those kinds of things. So they were very supportive. I had a couple of times when I was a kid that on Halloween would be an opportunity to go out into the world presenting is how I felt. But even there, I wanted to be careful. You know, first of all, I wanted to kind of downplay it in front of my friends that, you know, I wasn't really enjoying this that much. But I also didn't want to do it too often, because if I dressed like that every Halloween, then people would start to suspect something. So all those things had happened. There was really not any other sharing of it. I remember, though, in junior high, this is what middle school, what's now called middle school, used to be called junior high. And I went from elementary school in sixth grade to the junior high in seventh grade. And it was the first time that we weren't together with the class for the whole day. You would move between different periods and classrooms. And I decided that as I was walking through the hall, again, we didn't have backpacks back then, I was going to carry my books like I saw the girls carrying their books, kind of up to their chest, as opposed to how the boys carried them down by their side. And that did not last very long, because I started getting bullied and having the books pushed out of my hand and thrown across the floor. So all these instances, I was kind of reinforced with the negative that you can't do this. And that was kind of what it was like. It was something, though, that I constantly thought about, dreamed about, fantasized about, but really just kept to myself.
Yeah, that's just so resonant. So resonant. Mm-hmm. I also used to use Halloween as an opportunity to express myself in ways that felt affirming. And also, I'm Jewish, and there's a holiday called Purim, where you also have the opportunity to dress up. So I had like twice a year. So I feel lucky that I had the opportunity twice instead of the once. But it does make me happy to know that at least when, you know, when the older neighbor brother, you know, pulled on you, quote unquote, and then when your parents were talking to you, that it wasn't shaming you. It just was kind of, because there could have gone a different way where there was a lot of shame and, you know, making you feel terrible, which a lot of trans and queer kids face, versus just like, we're kind of like enforcing the societal norms right now. This isn't something like, you know, there's like, they're in a line, and I'm just really happy to hear that they didn't cross that for you, because that I feel like would have made things a lot harder.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think what they were trying to do was to protect me. You know, when I was about 16 years old, I shared with my sister, who's 6 years younger than me. I don't know why, but I just felt that I needed to tell somebody. And I said to her, you know, I wish I was a girl. I've always wished that I was a girl. But almost as soon as I said that, I said, don't tell mom and dad, don't tell mom and dad. And being a little sister, she did tell mom and dad. And it was very much like that first time. My parents talked to me, but it wasn't in anger or shaming. It was, your sister tells us that you wish that you were a girl. And I went into immediate defense mode and said, oh, I was just kidding. No, I don't feel that way. Unfortunately, both of my parents have died, but I suspect that especially my mom probably suspected something was a bit different about me. I wasn't terribly effeminate as a boy, but I also wasn't a typical boy. You know, when all my friends were playing sports, I was quite happy spending time in the library and doing other more cerebral things than roughhousing with the kids. But I just suspect that they probably suspected something at that point.
Yeah. It's my parents are alive. I'm in their home, and they're supportive. But I'm thinking about my grandpa in particular, my papa, who I never came out to him in any for any of my identities that I hold. But I mean, he had just, I mean, Before it came out to other people, he had to have suspected because I always wanted to shop in the boys section, and he never shamed me for that and let me just be, and never said, like, well, girls don't do that, which was the message that I got all the time, was like, this is not what girls do. And I was like, well, I'm not one, so let me do it. I learned later. I had asked my mom about it, and she said, "Of course you knew you were gay." And I was like, "How?" And she's like, "Well, you were the president of your Jewish Queers and Allies group at the Jewish group on campus, and in the paper all the time." And he saw the newspaper. I was like, "Oh, did not even think about that." It was like before social media, so it just didn't even occur to me that people were like read the newspaper. I don't know, but it's those moments where, even if it's not explicit, like saying like I support you, but it's the quiet ways of support, of like, we're just trying to protect you and we're not going to shame you, but like, we just want to keep you safe, is a different kind of support, which is also in the bucket of importance when it comes to this.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And the last time as a kid that I dressed as a girl for Halloween, I was a teenager at this point, and I went to a Halloween party dressed as a cheerleader. And my mom really got into it in terms of, my makeup and making sure that my costume looked realistic. So that was another way of supporting me without explicitly saying anything.
Yeah, because I could imagine there could be a scenario where a parent would be like, there's no world where you're even leaving the house like this, even for Halloween. And yet we have your mom being like, I'm gonna like double down on this and help you with your makeup and show you what to do. And like, that's really sweet. I'm really happy to know that. And something else that struck me that you said that you like you were new like you've known forever that you are who you are, but that the word transgender didn't really even come into the vernacular or wasn't even really invented till the mid-60s. And so it's almost like you transcend, pun intended, the label, which I just think is amazing, because there's so many arguments out there around trans queer and trans folks, like, we're making it up and this is brand new, and that this is a fad or a phase. And it's like, people have been feeling this way and have who people have exist trans people have existed forever. Even when there weren't words, we know who we are. And that really struck me when you shared that.
Yeah, it was. I didn't need the word to know who I was. The word was a nice way of explaining it in one word. But the word that was used before transgender became more popular was transsexual. That was the word I had heard. And my understanding of the word transsexual at the time was that this was somebody who not only felt to be the opposite gender of what they were born, but that they had had an operation to actually change themselves. And so I did not consider myself to be a transsexual because I had had no operations. So even that word did not really describe who I felt I was on the inside.
Yeah. And that word, transsexual, kind of fell out of use for a while, except as a derogatory slur. And I don't know what a slurm is.
A slur, a term or slur combined. A
Oh,
slur.
yeah.
You've just
Yes, thank
created
you.
a new
I couldn't think
word.
of the
Congratulations.
Yay. And what's wild is that all words are made up, which I think is just so neat. So a derogatory slurm, but that now has been like reclaimed by a lot of people again, which I find to be fascinating and amazing. Just watching like the history of words, go in and out of usage and how and why. I also just so much of my story is so similar to yours. When I realized I was non-binary, I didn't know the word for it either. I didn't know non-binary or genderqueer existed. It dawned on me one at a I was at a lipstick lesbian awareness party in the Lower East Side in the city. and surrounded by these beautiful lipstick lesbians, femme lesbians, which I never have identified as. So there is an ally. And it just an aha moment was like, oh my God, I'm not a lesbian because I'm not a woman, holy, and I'm not a man. So I'm something else. And I knew what it just made sense, even though I didn't know the word for it. And so I wish that people could just trust us when we say we know who we are, even if we don't have the exact language, because we know who we are. We know who we are.
And there was no one that convinced me or, told me that I was who I was. I knew, you know who you are on your inside. That was where I knew it.
Yeah, me too. And okay, so I want to talk about Face App because I love, because I would imagine that they didn't set out to be a trans affirming app in this way. Similarly, when I don't know if you know this about Zoom, but Zoom has filters. My friend Sarah told me years ago that they have a bunch of filters that you can like add lipstick, you can add different eyebrows, you can add facial hair. And so before I started testosterone, I like played around in the Zoom filters and like saw what my face would look like with a goatee and with a beard. And I was like, this is so gender affirming. And I bet Zoom had no idea what they were doing.
Oh, I can imagine. Although, who knows? Maybe there was some trans employee who said, "Hey, let's have some fun with this." Maybe there was somebody that was quietly, trying to put something out there that would be helpful.
Yeah, you know what? I like that. I like that someone was like a Trojan horse, just like in there secretly making things trans affirming. So I don't, did you, I don't know if you heard any of this discourse, but there was some chatter in my like trans universe around Face App that it was like a transphobic app. And did you hear? Were you in on any of those conversations, or were you, is it more just like, holy crap, this is so affirming. I'm not going to listen to anything else.
I think, I had heard some comments about other aspects that were negative, that, for African American people, it would lighten their skin or, and it would do things of that nature that were not really good to do. But I had not heard about transphobic, that it was transphobic. I remember because once I saw that picture in 2017, I had to share it. So I took a screenshot and I put it on my Facebook page and I just kind of, made it a little bit of a joke. Well, where, oh, if my, I had had a twin sister, this is what she might have looked like. And it was wonderful, some of the positive comments that people wrote in relation to that. Oh, she was so pretty, things like that just were so trans euphoric. I did not know that term then either, but that was what it was. It was, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful for people to see this version of me for the first time and to get positive feedback on it.
Yeah, especially because you shared that one of the things that you were most afraid of was people thinking, and you know, that you were hideous and that they would laugh. And so to have such a positive reaction is really just, it's amazing. Yeah, I think, I mean, we don't need to get into the negative of the Face App. It's, you know, years old and we can just focus on the positive. But so I am glad that it was such a positive experience for you. I don't remember if I did it or not. I think I might have, but I'm not sure. Doesn't matter. Anyways, so so when you revealed to the world your true self, what did that feel like once you did that, and how did people react, and how does that feel? How does it feel now, a few years out? Like, because you know you had talked about how you would think about your true self hourly, like all the time, and so now that you don't have, you have so much more brain space, I'd imagine. So how's it been going, I guess, is my overarching question. How did it go, and how's it going?
It has been amazing. I am extremely privileged, in terms of my coming out story. The first time I had shared it publicly was a community meeting in the town in which I grew up in and which I live now. And it was part of a equity and inclusivity initiative that had started in the town in light of the murder of George Floyd. And we had our first in-person meeting because a lot of this was taking place during COVID, so everything was being done via Zoom. But this was the first in-person meeting. And for the first time, even though at that time I did not know that I would be transitioning socially, I felt, because of all the attacks I was seeing on trans people around the country and around the world, that at a minimum, I needed to stand up and say, hey, I'm trans, and I want you to know that. And again, maybe people would come to me if they had questions, but I wanted to be able to state that. It was perhaps the most difficult public speaking I've ever done in my life. But I had some friends there who knew, who supported me. I could barely get the words out without breaking down. But the reaction that I had after that meeting just blew me away. The support that I had had from people in town, officials, clergy, all sorts of people, was amazing. So that was one big thing. You know, certainly in terms, I talk about my coming out being similar to, if you throw a pebble in a pond, you'll see the ripples that come out. And that was kind of how I viewed my coming out, was that first ripple was people in my family, those who I was closest to. The next ripple was maybe other family, brother, sister, folks like that. Next one would be close friends, and then finally so on and so forth. And almost without exception, I have received support from those people. I am sure there are some people who I know who were not supportive, but for the most part, they've kept that to themselves and they've respected who I am and my coming out. Of course, I'm a relatively public person, so I see a lot of negative comments that are put online, but they're usually by anonymous individuals. And so I give that as much credence as I would any other anonymous comments that folks make. So that does not particularly bother me, but I have been extremely privileged in terms of my coming out and the acceptance that I've received after that.
I'm really, really happy to hear that, because it's not the case for a lot of people, but it is the case for a lot of people. And I think right now in our country, especially, there's just so much negative energy and chatter and everything just surrounding the trans community that it's so important to hear these stories of, like, they're actually. It is a good thing to come mm-hmm. out and find your people and feel support. I'm curious, when you told your sister, she was like, I remember when you told me when I was 10.
She had said that she does not remember that at all. And she apologized for telling my parents, but she has been supportive, but she has no recollection of that conversation. It obviously impacted me a lot more than it did her.
Yeah. Typical little sister, let me tell ya.
Yeah.
as someone who was a little sister for a minute, I can understand. In my research of you before the interview, I saw that you also had, so you saw a book about Christine Jorgensen. Mm-hmm. And then you also had someone who you called to for support on a payphone named Paula Grossman.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you, so Paula, I didn't write this part down, but was it she like a voice teacher or song teacher? I'll let you tell who Paula is.
Sure. She was an elementary school music teacher. Mm. And this was the early 1970s. And at the end of one school year, she transitioned and was hoping to come back the next school year, September, as her true self. But this was kind of revolutionary at the time. So there was a lot of media coverage. There was a lot of public debate about whether it would be appropriate for her to come back to the school. But this was the first person somewhat locally that I became aware of. She lived in another county, or she actually lived in the same county, but she taught in another county. And again, keeping in mind, this is before the internet, I did as much research about people who were trans as I could. Going to the library, I would try to learn things. So I was pretty good at researching even before the internet, and you could ask Google to find things for you. And I found out what town she lived in. And so I went to the library and found the phone book for that city, and it had her address. So I wrote her a letter, and I don't remember exactly what I had said, but basically told her who I was, that I'd always felt this way, and I would love to talk with her. And we arranged for her to call me at a payphone about a half mile from my house. It was outside of a gas station. It was one that was in a phone booth, so you had some privacy. It was not just a phone hanging on a wall someplace, so I could close the door and not worry about anyone overhearing the conversation. And one evening after dinner, I rode my bike to this payphone and waited anxiously for the phone to ring. And when it did, she was the first person I ever really came out to and talked about this. And it meant so much to me to not only talk with someone about this, but somebody that I knew had felt the same way in her life. And it was one of the most important conversations I've ever had. It's also one of the biggest regrets that I've had, is that I never got to tell her how much that conversation meant to me once I had become an adult. But she took a risk because I was a minor, and you know, with all the stuff that she was going through, to have to potentially, if I were to share this with my parents and then it got back, that could have really been bad news for her. But she took a risk, and it was wonderful to finally talk to somebody. She was the first person I knowingly spoke to who was trans, and it was great to have that opportunity.
Wow, that's really special. And it's just, it really illustrates how community cares for each other, how our community cares for each other. And when we don't have the support, when we don't have the infrastructure out from outside the community, that we find ways to support each other within. It's just spectacular. And, you know, as you've been sharing all of your the pieces of your story, I just keep thinking about just like the negotiations and the like strategies that you had to keep in mind, and that a lot of trans people have had to keep in mind, even before this administration took office, on like how to keep ourselves safe, in whatever way, shape, or form. And the, you know, you had to go to the library and, you know, find the phone book and send a letter and then ride your bike to a phone booth and pray that she actually called. And, you know, it's just, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces for us to be able to find each other and find support and feel seen and to feel safe. And I don't think people outside of the trans community really fully understand what trans people hold on a daily basis, on a minute basis, on a yearly basis. And so I just felt important really to highlight that. So who are listening can understand, you know, what we are going through.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt. And growing up and even into adulthood, I was terrified of this secret coming out because I felt it would ruin me. So the way I dealt with it was I just poured myself into my career. That was really where I put my energy. It was a way to feel good about myself. And it was, again, it didn't take it away. I had reached a point probably as a teenager where I realized this was never going to go away. This was not something that I could, quote unquote, cure, that I would somehow have to deal with this. And for me, the career was the way to distract myself from how I was feeling.
Yeah. I think a lot of folks, queer folks, trans folks, will find another outlet to pour their energy into. My outlet, unfortunately, was alcohol. So I really, which I think is a commonality among queer and trans folks, as a way, instead of escaping in work, I escaped in alcohol. And so there's just, yeah, there's a lot. So, but you bring up your work. And so so let's talk about your work and how we all in New York City know you, whether we realize we know you or not. And so I first met you because you came to the TIFCO Collective launch event at the center. And my friend Tani came over and said, "The voice of the MTA is here. The voice of the MTA is here." And I was like, "No way," because I knew you existed. I was excited that the voice of the MTA was part of my community. And the fact that you came, everyone, all the way from New Jersey to New York City in the rain, was really special and really amazing. So you are the voice of the MTA. So tell us, how'd you get that amazing gig? And how does it feel to hear your voice? Because for some trans folks, hearing an older version of their voice can be uncomfortable, can be dysphoric. For some folks, it doesn't bring up, dysphoria. So I'm just curious, what this all feels like for you and all that good stuff.
Sure. Well, let's go back again a number of decades to when I was a kid. I fell in love with radio around fifth grade. And for those who are younger and say, how can you fall in love with radio? You have to remember radio was much different. It was kind of the internet of the day, because that was where you got your weather reports. You found the news headlines, the sports scores, the time checks, all these things that we can turn to our phones to today were things that you got from the radio. But what was most important about that was the connection with the people who were on the radio. And you felt as if they were your friends. And I just felt, this is magical. I want to be a part of this. And in my case, I wanted to be a news person. That was what I wanted to do. So I knew that if I was going to be on the radio, I would have to have a good speaking voice. And I would have to know how to read well. And so I would take the newspaper and I would practice reading out loud, just any stories that were in the newspaper to make sure, even before my voice changed in puberty, that I knew how to do pauses and emphasis and all these different things with my voice. And I had some opportunities in school. You know, anytime the teacher would ask for someone to read something aloud, my hand would shoot up and say, "Oh, I'll do it. Because most people don't want to do that. So that was the opportunity to do that. When I went to school, I went to Seton Hall University in South Orange, New Jersey, because they had a great radio station. And I was able to get the practical experience, but it just reinforced everything that I had thought about with radio. I got to interview some really cool people, ask a question of the President of the United States, go to some really cool events that were taking place, and it was just wonderful. About a year after I graduated, this new company came to New York called Shadow Traffic. And the idea behind Shadow was that they were going to provide traffic reports to all of the radio stations in the tri-state area. Again, no Google Maps, no Waze, none of those things that we have today. This was how you got your traffic updates, was on the radio. And I was fortunate enough to be hired as one of their original on-air reporters. And I did that for about 5 years. I figured it was just a radio gig and, you know, I wanted to do something else in radio after I left that. And I tried something and it didn't work out. and my old boss from Shadow Traffic had been hired by the New York City Department of Transportation to help set up their new communications center. And I was looking for a job because I had had this interim job of being the night shift manager at a mail sorting facility, which really wasn't what I wanted to do, but it paid the bills. And so I got hired by that. A little later on, moved over to the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. And that was my transportation education. Traffic reporting was my introduction. This was my education. And I was working in transportation and working with all these transportation professionals. One of the agencies that we worked with was the MTA. And over 10 years after I left the Port Authority, I was contacted by this guy I knew from the MTA. And he said, "We're working on this project called Countdown Clocks, and we need a voice for it." He knew my background because I did some occasional voice work, and he knew I had worked on the radio. And he said, "Would you like to be the voice for this?" And I had no idea exactly what it was, but it sounded intriguing. It sounded like fun. I like to do some voice work. So I said, "Sure." And we went to this studio at the time in Rutherford, New Jersey. And I recorded over a couple of days, probably about 1,000 or more recordings, because the computer puts together these individual words or short phrases. So when I was in the studio, I'm recording things like first, second, third, up to 280th or whatever, you know, uptown, downtown, Bronx bound, Brooklyn bound, all these different things, all the names of the stations, all sorts of things that we recorded, and the computer puts it together. And so this was 2009 that I did the recording. Shortly thereafter, they started rolling it out. And the first time that I went into a subway station, it was pretty cool hearing my voice coming through the speakers. Now, I had already heard it played because I'm also the voice on the air train at Newark Liberty International Airport. So I had already heard my voice on transit facilities, but this was a very cool experience to hear it in the New York City subway system, the biggest transit system by far in the country. And it was just amazing. And the way I've dealt with hearing that voice, first of all, I still use that voice professionally. When I was doing voice work, you know, I would describe myself in different ways. Oh, I'm a voice actor, I'm a voice artist, a voiceover artist, all different types of descriptors. But I've settled now on voice actor. And the reason that was important to me is, what do actors do? They portray individuals that are not themselves. And so when I'm doing that voice, I am portraying someone that is not me. But at the same time, I'm proud of the work that I've done in radio and in voice work. And I don't have a problem with hearing that voice. And quite often when I'm doing any kind of a public appearance, I will say to the audience, because I'll be talking in this voice, and I'll say, "You probably don't really recognize this voice, but if you are a New Yorker and you're on the subway, you might better recognize this voice. The next downtown one train to South Ferry is approaching the station. Please stand away from the platform edge." And then I go back to this voice. So it's almost like a ventriloquist in some ways, except my lips are moving.
Right. That's, well, what a story. I love that, and I love the way that you've reframed, you know, that you're a voice actor and you're voicing someone that's not you, and that you're able to still hold the pride of all the past work that you've done. And it's just, it's, you know, there are so many, there's so many different ways to be and experience transness. You know, and there are some people who don't want to have anything to do with their past. And there are some people who are proud of their past. And there are some people who are still figuring out which way it is. And some days they're proud and some days they're not. And it's just, it's so interesting. And amazing that you are the voice of the MTA and that you are, and then I think I saw it was a few years ago. I think it was when you came out that there were wasn't there like a what am I trying to say here? Like an announcement, like through the station, like during Pride Month, like say, am I getting that right? That you were that like sharing like part of your story a little bit through the announcement?
That happened about a year and a half after I had transitioned. It did not happen immediately. And that was only for Transgender Day of Visibility in 2024.
Got it.
We had done some special announcements that ran in a couple of stations, including Christopher Street, which is, as you may know, is just outside the Stonewall Inn. So it was a very appropriate station. And they've actually since renamed the station to Christopher Street Stonewall. I forget exactly. I think it's just Christopher Street Stonewall now, but to mark its historic significance as well as its location.
That's really cool. I want to make sure that we talk about your film. So the film that just won all these awards. Do you want to share with us what this documentary was about?
Sure. This was in conjunction with those special announcements that we had talked about that were running at
Okay.
the MTA. I was approached early last year by an ad agency in New York, and they said, we'd like to do, every year we do a pro bono project. We'd like to do this one this year focused on you because of all the vitriol that had been put toward the trans community. And would you be open to that? And I said, sure, because one of the things that I feel very strongly about is I want to use my skills as a communicator to raise trans visibility. So this was a great opportunity to do that. And there were several parts to this. There were the messages that we talked about that were played in the station. There was a short series of podcast interviews that focused on LGBTQ history with a focus on trans history in and around New York. There were interviews that we did with trans caregivers in terms of medical and things of that sort. There were some ads that went up in the Christopher Street station as well. But the big piece was this film. It's a short film. It's only 3 minutes and 47 seconds long, but it basically tells a little bit of my story in a very well done fashion. They brought in a director from the West Coast. There was a whole crew that worked on this. We filmed it in a few different stations, 42nd Street Bryant Park, down by the World Trade Center, and some other places, and included some interviews with me. And it has been submitted to several different festivals, and it's won major awards at those festivals. The first one was in Cannes, France, not the Cannes Film Festival, but a festival of advertising and creativity that happened a short time after that. So that all these things, and it moved, from people that have seen it, have told me it moves them in terms of being able to see this story. So it's won some industry awards, but it's also been shown at the Garden State Film Festival in New Jersey, where I live, down in Asbury Park. It was shown at a film festival in my hometown of Cranford. It's won awards at those. Just this week, I found out that it had won three Gold Clio Awards, which are described as the Oscars of advertising. So it's wonderful to me that this is available to raise visibility because I can only be obviously in one place at a time, and I can't travel all over the country and all over the world to share my story. But something like this can be shared internationally, through the internet, vehicles like YouTube and such, where folks can have access to this. And that means it can reach people in places that aren't especially trans friendly. So that means a lot to me to have that as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's really spectacular. That's so much cool stuff. And I wish we had more time because I want to talk more about the radio and how I used to pretend I was on the radio and used to be the news anchor in my 8th grade and 7th grade news, like our news that we had in our middle school. But anyways, just know that I'm a kindred spirit in all of the ways. But I do have to bring us to our lightning round of questions, which again are meant to be lighthearted. They are open-ended instead of either-or questions because I was called in lovingly that they were too binary, and so they might be a little bit harder to answer. But you can always just say pass if you don't feel like answering.
Sure.
And there are no right or wrong answers. Are you ready?
Sure. Yes, I am.
All right. Where is your favorite place to think?
My porch on my house. It's a nice sunny place, usually, if it's a sunny day. I've got a little fireplace, a fake fireplace, but it looks very realistic. It's a great place, and I can listen to nice music. It's a great, perfect spot for that.
Sounds lovely. Who is an influential queer person in your life?
Oh, I think a number of people play different roles. Certainly Paula Grossman, that we talked about earlier, played a very important role for me. There are people I admire, friends that I don't want to name publicly right here, but also public figures like the Congresswoman from Delaware, Sarah McBride. Those are important individuals to me. So I think I like to take bits and pieces of a lot of different individuals and find what resonates with me.
Yeah, definitely. What is a song that you can listen to on repeat forever?
Saturday in the Park by Chicago.
Oof, that's a good one. Good one. I'm gonna listen to that when we hang up. All right, what is one thing you want to be known for?
I am known for my voice, and that will always be the case. But I hope at some point I will be known for making a difference in terms of trans visibility.
It's beautiful. What does identity euphoria feel like to you?
It is something, and I would narrow it to trans euphoria for myself, that I felt long before I even transitioned or foresaw transition as a possibility. And it's something that's unique to trans individuals because only we can experience that and know what that's like. It is one of the most wonderful feelings, and it can happen from seemingly inconsequential things that anybody else would not even notice and brush off. But when I feel it is wonderful.
Amen. Okay. Where do you find joy?
Oh, a lot of different places. I find joy with friends. I find joy in eating sometimes, which might be unfortunate because it means it's a bit of a battle to not eat too much. I find joy. I love exploring and going places that I've never been before. And it doesn't have to be something exotic. It doesn't have to mean getting on an airplane and flying across the ocean. It can just be going down a street on my bike that I've never been down before, or walking into a restaurant that I've never been before. So anything that's new can be joy-inducing for me.
I love that. All right, the last one, the only binary question that I could not get rid of. Bagels or donuts?
Bagels. I remember when I first discovered bagels. Again, not being Jewish, they were not part of my upbringing, but there was a shopping mall that wasn't too far away from me. And rather than getting a soft pretzel, we went to this bagel shop. And just seeing how they made bagels was pretty fascinating to me. But a good salt or everything bagel, I can eat that by itself, especially if it's warm, but it's a little bit better if I have cream cheese on it.
Yeah, so there are no right or wrong answers, but that is the right answer, bagels. I'm now I'm in Ohio right now, and I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to get a good bagel, but I might just have to wait till I get back to New York. But Bernie, thank you so much for joining me, for sharing so much of your story and yourself. I really appreciate it, and I honestly will always have a little bit of, feel a piece of you every time I'm on the subway, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's
And thank you for
wonderful,
coming
Ben.
out.
Thank you so much, Dubs. It has been wonderful being with you.
Thank you for coming.